1350KMAN.com.
And we're back here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN. Continuing our conversation here with Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggins. And I think it might be a good time to ask you a little bit. We were talking about it before during the break here, but with a changing administration at the state level, of course, Governor-elect Laura Kelly stepping in, your position is appointed, as you were pointing out to me. Are you aware of any potential changes coming up, and have you heard anything from the governor-elect?
No, I haven't. You know, to be honest with you, I serve at the pleasure of the governor, and you know, in uniform, I serve at the pleasure of the president. So, you know, the governor comes in. I'm sure she's got a number of cabinet level officials and other appointments that she's studying real hard, and her transition team's working on. And that's just that's part of life. That's part of being in this particular line of work. And so, you know, it's something that I'm sure she'll work through. And then once she, what we call, take the flag. And goes through her inauguration, her transition team, her staff, and herself will, of course, flesh out those positions and those individuals that she needs and wants by her side as a member of her staff.
All right. We'll just have to wait for that, I assume.
Sure,
then.
Sure.
All right. And moving on, we've also been talking for the past couple months now. There's been some deployments upcoming at Fort Riley, and you were pointing out to me that some people might notice a bit of vehicular activity around Fort Riley. That's stemming from the deployments, right?
Oh, that's true. Not only vehicles, but helicopters. You know, the Combat Aviation Brigade, they're right on I-70 at Marshall Army Airfield. You'll see a lot of helicopters taking off and heading south. This is that deployment we talked about several months ago, and John Kulisewski and his staff talked about, so that it wasn't hopefully a surprise to anybody. But, you know, we've got 9,000 to 10,000 troops going out of Fort Riley that are going to numerous places on the planet. We got Europe, Poland, for example. You got individuals going to Afghanistan. So, I mean, this is a time where I'm sure the staff out there at Fort Riley are very busy, especially the logisticians, the deployers, getting everything on rails, getting everything on flatbed semi trucks. And then actually self-deploying, and then we'll see, once we get the equipment out, you'll see the soldiers start climbing on aircraft as well and heading in their deployment sites.
And do you know the numbers or the specific units or brigades that are being deployed? I cannot recall them.
Yeah, I think the Combat Aviation Brigade, 1st Brigade, you have the Sustainment Brigade. Those are the big organizations. And then you have the 2nd Brigade that's going to be going to California, the National Training Center, as they start to prepare for their impending employment. They're going to be going through a training exercise out at Fort Irwin, California as well. So we have some that are training, and then we have some that are actually deploying. And then, of course, the division in May timeframe will start gearing up for their warfighter exercise, which is really their report card as a division. We'll see that take place in May.
And for – I'll get back onto that warfighter exercise. But just for my information, when these deployments happen, do units typically come back in their stead, or is it usually just a one-way type deal?
No. When they deploy, normally there's nobody that backfills them at an installation. This is that strain I talked about because, you know, individuals – if you take a look, 45% of the GDP in the Central Flint Hills is generated by Fort Riley, Kansas. Not a lot of people know that. A lot of people sit back and go, hey, you know, it's not that big of an impact. It will be somewhat an impact, and people need to understand that, and that's transparency. But there will be no backfill. We will have about 20,000 Reserve and National Guard forces that do come into Fort Riley and the surrounding area to train. And execute training, and they'll fill hotels and they'll be in restaurants, and you'll see them in uniform. They'll be wearing a different patch on their left shoulder.
And for that warfighter exercise coming up in May, I believe you said, what will folks around the area see when that begins to kick off?
Well, primarily, you know, that you'll see the division, probably a talk. So you'll see a tent complex. There will probably be very little that you'll notice outside the wire of Fort Riley. It primarily is going to happen in a live and synthetic and virtual environment and constructive, which means they'll have some that are actually taking place with tents and generators and vehicles. And then you'll have some that's actually going to happen on a computer screen. And so we basically synthesize and bring all that together, that live construction and virtual, into an exercise that really taxes the division commander and his staff.
How long have you been doing those sort of virtual slash physical real-time exercises? How long has that been going on?
Oh, it's been on many years. The Army's been the leading edge of the spear with regards to simulation. And it's something we've invested a significant amount of money on up front, which really saves you on training dollars overall. I mean, because if you're not taking a tank out of a motor pool, for example, and you can virtually do that, you save on gas and maintenance, wear and tear. So we've been doing it for a long time. It's something that we have folks that their military occupational specialty is in simulation, and they advise the commander, and we have individuals that actually build that process. Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, that's the Army's leading individuals. So right here in Kansas, for setting up those exercises, and they'll be the ones that come out and evaluate and observer control the division.
And that sort of is a little bit of another good segue there into a little bit of a talk about technology. There's been a bit of a defense budget increase, and there might also be some more coming up in the future. We'll have to see on that one, of course. But we were talking before that that's especially done to be able to build up new technology and increase maybe a technological gap on some competitors around the world.
I think that's how the president sees it. You know, he's basically initiated or introduced an increase from $719 billion to $750 billion. I don't think that will happen, but he sees that increase not necessarily in force structure, individuals, humans. I think he sees that as investing in technological advantages that we have out there, because we have fallen off considerably in our technological advantage with our adversaries, China, Russia. And we can ill afford to do that. I think it was one of the chairmen of Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time that basically said, if you can use a sledgehammer over a regular hammer, then use the sledgehammer. And that's how we got to look at things. We don't want our servicemen and women going into a fight with parity. We want to have unequaled overmatch because we want them to come home safe. And I think that's what we got to do as Americans, is invest in the technology and in the best equipment we can get our service members.
And do you imagine that do you imagine as well that the private industry will have a role in that as well?
Yeah, I think, the bottom line, it takes money for these research and technology. I think, to be honest with you, everybody steals our technology because we have the smartest and the best industry in the world. We just have to give them the opportunity, and we have to procure this technology. In the past, in the counterinsurgency operations, we didn't necessarily need it, but now more than ever, in a combined arms fight with a near peer adversary, we absolutely need it.
And we're getting very close to being out of time here, but I just wanted to ask you one last thing. I was reading something on Stars and Stripes this morning. There was a quote from Jared Line. He's a Navy veteran and CEO of the Student Veterans of America. And he was talking about how veterans are sort of primed and very important to be able to fill a leadership deficit in America. Do you feel he's right with that statement?
I think so. I mean, the bottom line, after World War II, our veterans rolled up their sleeves. A lot of them went into politics. They went into industry. They went into a lot of different areas, agriculture. There's a lot of places for our veterans to lead. One thing that the military gives our servicemen and women when they depart the military is leadership skills. And they have a desire to want to serve. And being a selfless servant is a powerful tool. And one day I had an employer tell me, one of the best attributes from his employer was that they show up on time.
All right. And that's, I think, a good way to close off here. Thanks again, Governor
Thank
Military
you.
Council
Thank
Executive
you.
Director Perry Wiggins. And if you missed any of this episode, you can check it out online, newsradiokman.com. Head on down to the on-demand section. Coming up tomorrow, the mayor and manager of Manhattan are going to be in studio.
It's 10 a.m. CBS News comes next. Clark Howard Rush, Dan Patrick, The Game, Wildcat Insider.
When you shop at Carpet One of Manhattan, you're among members of the community. Carpet One of Manhattan. KMAN, Manhattan. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Steve Kathan, Nantucket Island, Massachusetts.